Because most people, you talk to them about conditioning, their first thought is get on and ride, be able to develop the respiratory, all of the cardio type exercises so that when they are riding them, they don't huff and puff as much, they maybe don't sweat as much. Those are the easy things to see. But what is hard to target and hard for us to see is the other areas of strengthening that will then enhance the horse's ability in your specific sport.
Welcome to the Equine Body Talks podcast. We'll be diving into the equine industry from the lens of a body worker, talking to other equine professionals and discussing scenarios around soft tissue work for all equine athletes. I'm Kim Krebs, your host. I've been working for over 2 decades in this industry as a loper, barn manager, and body worker. With the many horses I've worked with in all of these capacities, it has driven me to want to continually find out the why and the hows of equine biomechanics, health, and performance. To help these athletes achieve their best potential while limiting the wear and tear on their bodies. This podcast is dedicated to opening the conversation around equine wellness, diving deeper into the whole body approach for equine performance horses. For this episode and next week's, we're going to be doing things a little bit differently. Instead of an interview like we have been doing, I have pulled out some excerpts from our conditioning study along with a chat I had with Tina to discuss conditioning in our horses. This week, you'll hear Tina and I discussing conditioning in general on a mentorship day we had at one of our barns. Next week, we'll dive into the actual study we undertook with the help of Energy Equine and Dr. Chad Hewlett. As body workers, it's a horse's condition hand in hand with their posture, which we work on the most. A horse's condition and how they carry themselves is the key elements which help to determine their full ability to perform. For many, winter is often a season where our horses and ourselves see some downtime, at least to some degree. That can range from meaning months off, being kicked out to pasture, or housed in stalls but given daily turnout time with no riding, to continuing to be rode, but with maybe some cross-training work or simple hacks out in the field or arenas to keep a level of fitness while allowing the mind a break from rigorous training. Downtime is important for their mental and physical health. However, coming back to condition after this downtime and how we do that in a targeted and individual way could mean the difference in your next season as to how well your horse is able to perform. For those listening in the Southern Hemisphere, this is likely the middle of your show season, when you feel your horses are in peak condition. However, they may be starting to see some soreness or injuries creeping up due to the intensities of your sport or repetitive nature of constant training. Wherever your horses are at, today's chat is going to be relevant because monitoring our horses' physical condition and ability to support proper posture is crucial in trying to negate as much as possible any injuries and continue to gain ground when improving in our sports. Of course, there are many factors that need to be addressed, including nutrition and stress management, but those are going to be for another podcast. Today, we're talking conditioning. Through the mentorship work I have been doing with Tina Watkins of In-Hand Equine Therapy, my understanding of the importance of targeted conditioning has literally blown up, both in how I now evaluate client horses to how I prepare my own for work. I thought what better way to start our conditioning talks than to talk to Tina herself and share that vast knowledge that she has spent decades building on. It was this time last year when Tina and I were in the midst of a conditioning program with our own horses. We wanted to not only practice what we preach, but also be able to show our clients and others that it really is possible for us to make significant changes in our horses' overall body condition and strength with some very simple exercises and stretches. In our horses, we were also working in conjunction with a riding program of some sort, based on where they started their conditioning. We also wanted to make this trackable and find a way to measure the changes happening in the soft tissue. Dr. Chad Hewlett of Energy Equine stepped up to work with us to make this happen. Dr. Hewlett determined a specific location on the horse's lumbar zone that we could ultrasound repeatedly every few months. Both Dr. Hewlett and Tina went through each horse and did movement and static evaluations at the start of the study to understand the limitations each horse had and to devise the programs appropriate for each one. All this information, along with the full details, including video guidance of each exercise and stretch done, we have made available on our online course platform at inhandequinetherapy.podia.com, which I'll link to at the show notes and in our social media platforms. You'll hear the barn noises in the background as I decided to start recording our conversation as we were going to add to this podcast. The topic of what was our key points we wanted to adjust around conditioning was first in our discussion.
I think, you know, if we were to talk to clients about conditioning, I think there's some aspects of conditioning that gets missed in most people's conditioning programs. And that is there's a difference between conditioning core tissue, there's a difference between conditioning large muscle group tissue, and there's a difference between sports-specific conditioning. So when we're looking at conditioning, we would love to be able to break those three aspects down when you're looking at your conditioning program. And so many of us are really great at knowing what we need for our sport and really focusing on that sport-specific exercise protocol. But that exercise protocol, depending on the level that you're at in your sport, might miss other aspects of the horse's body that actually, if those areas aren't conditioned as well as the sport-specific areas, your horse, you're at risk for injury, but you're also not utilizing your horse's full athletic potential. Mm-hmm. Even if you're at a lower level in your sport, we would still want your horse to have full athletic potential. So when we developed the protocols for the conditioning study, that's what we were looking at, was trying to target areas of the body that might get missed in most people's regular everyday exercise protocols. Whether we were looking at English horses, Western horses, adult amateur horses, or professional horses, we really wanted to try to figure out a protocol that we could then take to the vets, and we could measure the core tissue when these horses were using this protocol and see then how the horses changed.
So conditioning isn't quite as straightforward as it seems. No longer are the days where we just get on and go, looking for good sweat to determine if we have rode the horses long enough. As riders and body workers, we really need to look at the horses as individuals, assess where they need support through their bodies, and potentially start with simple in-hand and isometric exercises before we even get on. Remember, muscle memory is a thing, and if we want to make lasting changes in our horses, we need to adapt the way we have been thinking about their conditioning programs. Here's an example.
Where we are going in straight forward motion, and people don't think about the lateral moves that are required. I think my sport of cutting is a prime example of that, where we get on and we condition the horses and we're looking at, you know, loping them and getting them fit. But we don't think about those lateral moves that they do when they're in the show pen, because, you know, they're going across the pen, but it's those hard stops, it's the quick turns, and it's all of that work that is required not only of the core tissue and the support through the back, but also that pectoral region, the thoracic sling, the stifles. Those all need to also be conditioned and have the support so that the strength is there. Also, being able to then ensure that the horse is strong enough that it has the support to the skeletal system, the joints, and that you're not then setting your horse up for a potential injury. You know, whether the injury happens right off the bat because they are in poor condition, or whether it happens because they're not in engaging the proper muscles throughout their training, and it's just a slow wear and tear that then develops. So the end of the season, right as you're getting ready for your finals, potentially you're now taken out of it.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, Kim, because I think that sometimes people really think to themselves that they're doing all the things that they should be doing. The horse is, like you say, using the word getting fit, and yet we're not quite aware of the core and how much strength we actually have in the horse's stability. There's some really good human studies saying that, you know, some of the strength sports that we see played, like football and basketball, that these guys are looking more and more at what they can do to change their core stability so that, like you mentioned, the joints aren't taking as much impact, the spine's not taking as much impact. And I think for us horse riders, we often, you know, look at legs and look for little swellings and little things in legs, but we forget about the spine and we forget about the rest of the body that is taking our rider weight and maybe potentially needing more strength or more support.
Mm-hmm. Right. I know what you're thinking. Now we're looking not only at muscle development and respiratory development to condition, but also skeletal, joint, ligament, and tendons. Don't worry, it sounds like maybe an impossible task to achieve. But you'll see, it's about targeted exercises, a plan, consistency, and being able to read your horse to understand when it's ready to step up to the next level.
And I think the other thing for people to think about too is when you're looking at your horse in general, so many times, and we've been lucky to work this last year with so many excellent vets, and you know, so many times people say, oh yeah, you know, that's just old Sally, she never turns to the right, or you know, that's just old Fred, he always warms up slow. And I think if there's one thing that we could teach people about conditioning, it's that we have to ensure that we get rid of that thought process.
Yes, because there's a reason why they warm up slowly. There's a reason why they've always been hard to turn to the right or to the left. And that needs to be vetted out so that we can determine how then to help them and get them past that. And I think you're right. A lot of people also get to a point where they think, oh, the horse is too old to make those changes. Yeah. Just, you know, let it be, so to speak, because that's how they prefer to go. If you challenge that, then you're going to end up with the horse being sore or the horse being hurt. And I think there's a little bit to that, in that anytime you challenge, you can think of it in your own body. If you all of a sudden start a fitness regime and your body has been used to a certain posture or has been used to a certain inactivity level, and all of a sudden you start to challenge that, your body is going to be sore for a while until you're able to make those strengthening changes that then support that weak tissue and allow you to continue on it and hopefully achieve those goals that you were wanting, you know.
And I always find it interesting because people that come through those plateaus within their own body, they always feel so much better after, and yet, you know, when they don't quite equate that to the horse, that yes, the horse might have some struggle times and we might need to increase their soft tissue program, we might need to increase the support they're going to get if we are going to change these postures, and it doesn't happen overnight. And so we do have to allow for more support for the horse. But the interesting thing, taking us back to the conditioning study, was we can see that simple exercises done with consistency can bring us that into our programs. So it's not that the horse has to leave sport or that the horse has to leave the program they're in. This would be an addition that would then ensure that we're looking at more stability, more core strength, more stabilizer strength, and just enhance. So yes, I totally agree with you, Kim. I think there needs to be those times where we're looking at that horse. Okay, if we're going to change something, we have to have all of our kind of ducks in a row to make sure that that horse gets what it needs. But I think, you know, the overall long run will help us out a ton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that point because I think people definitely feel that they can get overwhelmed when they have an assessment done on their horse. We determined that there are some areas of potential weakness that need to be addressed, but it's then, well, how do I fit that into my current program? As opposed to realizing that it can be just a simple exercise or two that, done with consistency, you will actually find that horse makes a lot of progress.
Yeah. And I think we really saw that with my daughter's horse, Maddie, because, you know, we took a horse that was in work, doing a job for a kid very well, and a young person that doesn't have a lot, at that time, a lot of strength, because she was just 10 when we did the study. And, you know, seeing the changes that could be made by just adding these things in. So I think it highlights, you know, that it doesn't have to be a, you know, big, huge shift that you have to make. And, you know, you need another half an hour at the barn. And, you know, it starts to not fit into your program as easily as you'd like it to. I think that's kind of a neat thought to bring forward to people so that they realize that you can stay in sport. Because I've had a lot of people say to me, well, we're just coming into season, don't really want to take the horse out because they think that conditioning is a totally different thing, you know, mm-hmm. or if it's not sports specific, it must mean that they have to come out of their training program, they have to come out of their lesson program to be able to bring this, you know, kind of level of strength to their horse. And so I really, that was one of the neatest things for me with this conditioning study was, you know, that a horse that's already doing it and was already, you know, deemed quite fit could really change with the simple protocols.
Yeah. And to add to that point also is the fact that it was Maddie who did those exercises herself.
Right.
And yes, she had a smaller horse. She wasn't dealing with a full grown horse. She was dealing with a pony, but it still, there was a lot of those exercises she physically could not do. She didn't have the strength to do them.
Mm-hmm.
And so even with that, she was still able to have a bit of an adaption made on some of those exercises, or some exercises were omitted for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she still had significant changes done. And I think that to me also proved, you know, because oftentimes it may not be kids that we're dealing with in our clientele, but we're dealing with people that maybe have had injuries themselves, mm-hmm. that maybe are older as well.
Mm-hmm.
I hear a lot about, oh, I have a bad back, I can't do that with my back.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just proved that no matter what is going on with you individually, there are still exercises that can be adapted for you, and the horse is still able to create significant change.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's where a really good body worker or a really good veterinarian comes into play. Because if somebody just leaves you some exercises, but you don't understand them and you don't know what they're doing, it's so much easier to fall off the wagon than it is if you have somebody that is invested. They, you know the whys of what's happening, and, you know, you get help with your horse so that you know really what long-term change you're going for with this.
Yes. And it can be daunting in a lot of programs too, that where we'll say the owner isn't necessarily able to be there. The horse is in a training program, and so then needing to work with the trainers or the barn staff, the support staff, to try and fit some of these conditioning exercises into what is going to work for them, because they have super busy schedules with mm-hmm. multiple horses a day.
Right.
You know, we definitely see that quite a bit. And so I think that it goes back to the consistency work, though, and the fact that it doesn't need to be a half an hour
right.
per horse before and after, that it can be some very simple, very targeted exercises per horse that can be done, you know, before and after while they're being groomed. And it's the consistency, though, that is what's really showing to make the difference.
Yeah, and I love that point too. And I think the other thing that, you know, people that are listening could think about is that if your horse had a training session during the day and you were able to pop out in the evening and wanted to spend a little time with that horse, you can, you know, warm the horse back up with a, you know, a little hand walk and then, you know, apply the exercise program at that time. You know, it doesn't have to go directly with that training ride. Sometimes you might even get more benefit if the horse had its muscles targeted earlier in the day, and then you're coming out later on and doing the range of motion and the stretching. So I think, you know, it really is that case dependency that we need to make sure that people understand that, you know, they're not just doing the, I always use the belly lift example because I, whenever I ask new clients what exercise they're doing, that seems to be the one that they always say, oh, I'm doing belly lifts,
yeah,
you know, and that's great if that's appropriate for that horse, right? So I think that's the other thing to really think about is that when, you know, I think we all want the best for our horses. And when we're looking at these horses, if you had that targeted program that allowed you the knowledge that you're doing the best you can for that horse, I think that's, you know, that's a real key.
Mm-hmm. So one of the other aspects to doing these exercises, the targeted exercises, is oftentimes people will become quite gung-ho and want to see change and they want to see it quickly. And so they think that, okay, well, we can do up to 50 of these, I hear. So I'm going to start with 50. And unfortunately, the horse is not ready for 50. So we really have to, and that's again where we talk about that wellness team that you're going to have a part of your program that is going to talk to you about these exercises. They're going to be able to recognize where the horse currently is at and where they could maybe start and show you areas that you can look for and what the horse may start to fatigue if you do too many too fast, or areas where it maybe is, oh no, they could actually go up a little bit more. That seems to be no problem for them. So I think that's also a key point, is really being able to not just watch the area that you're targeting for fatigue, but also watch the horse and be cognizant of what the horse has maybe just done. So if you are talking about a horse that has just finished a half hour intensive training ride, you wouldn't then right away go into doing a pile of targeted exercises because their tissue will be too tired for that. So that's that thought process of maybe then coming back later on in the evening after they've had some time to recover, or just being able to modify the program a bit. But again, that's where your body worker, your veterinary practitioner, whoever you are using to develop these programs, you need to be able to have that open communication and know what is best for that horse.
Yeah, and I think one of the big things that I get questions on is, so what does fatigue look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people aren't quite sure what they're looking for, and they often go past the point of fatigue and they don't recognize it till the next day when the horse doesn't want to do those tummy lifts anymore, or doesn't want to do the rocking exercise anymore. And I think, you know, we have to be quite astute, and of course you have to know your own particular horse, but some of the things, you know, would be using other parts as leverage, like if they're really dipping their neck down when you're trying to do a belly lift rather than just targeting through the actual belly, if they're trying to get wide with their hind legs, if they're trying to dance around. Sometimes, you know, we think that they're being a bit naughty, and actually they literally have hit their fatigue point.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's very interesting, and Kim, you've got a great example of this, but sometimes it's after two or three. Like, you think to yourself, well, how could they be fatigued after two of these? I mean, just have to lift their tummy up, my goodness.
Yeah.
Right? But it is amazing how quickly, when they haven't used their core and they've been using their larger muscle groups and just using their legs for locomotion and not really using the ring of muscles to engage the back, how quickly they do fatigue. So, you know, really starting to watch for things. Sometimes it's the trembly muscle, but oftentimes we don't see that as much with the horses. So really looking at, you know, other areas. Are they still comfortable? Are they showing, you know, signs of distress? Are they wiggling around? Are they turning around to look at you? You know, those kind of small things, really noting that, because if you push too far, not only do you build a little bit of resentment towards the exercise, but the tissue itself will, of course, have those extra waste products in them. And then, it's not going to be able to recover the same way that we would like it to. And we're going to be having extra trapped waste products in that tissue that then is what gives you that next day soreness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Neveray was a prime example of this when we were doing the conditioning study, and we started, he had been off for quite a while, quite a few months, and for him, he was showing signs of fatigue in that he was using his neck, like you had mentioned, very much as leverage, and anytime you would ask for a belly lift, he immediately dropped that head down, and he's like, yeah, my back's going up, that's what you want. But he actually wasn't engaging the core, he was just lowering the neck. So I think that is a really good point, because so many people don't know to look for those areas of compensation that they're using. And and the other thing to talk about, I guess, is the fact that there could be exercises that they just can't do.
Right.
And so maybe a great idea to chat that through with your body worker before they leave, to see that the horse can actually perform the exercises that they're leaving you with. Because, again, never a great example of this when we were trying to do the forelimb pushback, and he literally would fall down. Mm-hmm. He could not. He did not have the support to be able to bear the weight in the back, rock back, and then come forward. He would just fall right on top of me. So right. Not only was it unsafe for him, it was unsafe for me. And at that point, I realized, okay, it's not one he can do just yet.
Right.
So we're going to leave that off for the next week, and I'll come back and check. But in the meantime, I'm still going to continue on. I'm doing the wither rocks. I'm going to target that thoracic area. I'm also doing the lateral tail pulls. I'm targeting his stabilizers in the hind end. And it wasn't that long. It literally was just a week before he was able to start to do the forelimb pushback. And when he started to do them, at first it was two. And then within a few days, we could add another one and then another one. And he slowly started to build it up. And so, again, it's also just checking in. Once you have that strength and you can start to do some of those areas, again, not going gung-ho and being like, okay, we're good now. We can start just really targeting here. You need to make sure that you're always checking in.
Yeah, totally. And also checking in, like you mentioned earlier, with the ride that you had that day. So let's say you had a really concentrated lesson the day before, and the horse, you were planning on coming out and just doing a lighter, stretchy day because you knew your lesson was quite intense. So, we always use the rule of fours in exercise. So we, the first day you do something, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, no problem. I can get this done. This is easy. And then the next day you go to the gym, you're like, well, but I can still rock it. I'm still good. I can still do this. Then day three is the day that you're usually like, oy, caramba, I'm really sore. I don't know if I can do this same level of exercise. And then it's day four if day four goes well, that's in exercise therapy where we say to ourselves, okay, we're going to make a change with the program. So always think of that too, right? Because horses are always wanting to please. And so, if you do something the first time and you're like, yep, no problem, 10 belly lifts, he did them good, he wasn't using his neck, it's all great. So then don't get stuck on that 10, because you might come back on day three and he's diving his neck down, mm-hmm. he's dancing around, he's giving you all the signs that we've actually went too far, right?
Yeah.
And that's not a big deal. We can back that right back up. But always use that rule of four. Say to yourself, if my horse can do something, four times in a row and I'm rocking it, and he's not showing any signs of fatigue, and he's willing to keep going, he's interested in the activity, then, after that day four, then we're going to add our next thing in. So whether that is more reps or if that is more intensity. And that's another thing in conditioning that we really have to talk about, is that there is two types of ways to increase your exercise. protocols. There's time and then there's intensity. And so many of us haven't been an elite athlete ourselves, and we don't realize what those two divisions are. Time's pretty obvious, right? Like, okay, well, I'm getting my horse back from winter here. The weather's getting nicer. I'm going to start with 10 minutes of walking. And if he handles that really good for 4 days, I'm going to go up to 15 minutes of walking. Okay, well, that's pretty obvious. But I think what happens to people is they really miss out on the intensity part. So that if we use that same example, that horse has been walking for 4 days and he's handling it really great. And then on day five, we decide, well, we're going to add in some trot and I'm going to go for 15 minutes. Well, unfortunately, what's happened there is we've chosen from both columns, right? We've chosen time because we went up to 15 minutes, and we chose intensity because we added the trot. So that's something really important for the listeners to think about when I'm doing an exercise protocol for people. Sometimes they don't quite understand why if we add trot, we might even back off the time just a little tiny bit. We might go to that kind of 8 minutes of walking to be able to add that trot in without changing our time frame, you see. So intensity is something that really needs a good talk through for people, because I don't think they oftentimes understand what intensity could be. And sometimes intensity is as simple as adding a saddle. If you've had a horse that's been off all winter and you just started with hand walking, and then you throw the saddle on, the weight of the saddle affects the spine, of course, especially if you're riding Western. And so, you know, there's our intensity aspect, right? So I think that's something that listeners really need to think about when they're doing these exercise protocols, to really understand what they're doing when they're making these programs for their horses, you know, kind of come back from winter, or, you know, even if you're in a barn right now with the COVID situation, because there's still scheduling at all the barns, right? So let's say, you know, if we do get into right now in Canada, we're just working on the one stage. If we do get into the next stage and things open up a bit more, we can't just go from 2 days a week at 15 or 20 minutes to 4 days a week at that same 15 and 20 minutes without thinking about those things, right? So yeah, it's very interesting. Conditioning is complicated and yet, you know, really fascinating.
No, I think that actually is a super excellent point, because people do just think that they can. And when I say people, it happens everywhere. It's not picking
totally
on anybody individually. And it's been a train of thought for a long time. But that you get on, you start the walk, then you start to trot.
Right.
And then you do some canter, and then you come back to trot, and then walk, and then you're done.
Right.
And so I think it's trying to challenge that traditional view of the conditioning, which is really what we were striving to do with this study particularly.
And so I think that's a great point, Kim, because, you know, when we asked Energy Equine if they wanted to be a part of this study, the head veterinarian, Dr. Chad Hewlett, was very interested in it, because we did want to look at a program that was set out and different horses from different backgrounds with different people doing the exercise protocol. So some of the horses in work, some of the horses coming back from work. And I think it really showed us how significant the isometric and activation type exercises are when it comes to these protocols.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes right with our time and intensity talk that we were just having, because if you are just in the walking stage of a horse coming back and you add in the isometric exercises, you have upped the intensity. And, you know, again, lots of people don't realize, they don't think to themselves, oh, well, yeah, I've been walking for 15 minutes, so I'll just add in the exercises and tomorrow I'll trot. And then if the horse can't take that or has a back step from that, They really don't understand why that happened. And we're talking about sound horses too. Mm-hmm. Lots of people think, you know, coming back to work protocols are just for horses that are
rehab.
Lame. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So if we were going to kind of look at what things increase intensity, just for people to think about it, it's not just that, you know, we mentioned rider weight before, so that's one of them, adding that rider weight back in. But footing changes intensity, speed changes intensity.
Even transitions.
Overcoming inertia, yeah. Will change your intensity. Laterals will change your intensity. Circling, because of the forces that are created from circling, changes intensity. So, you know, you really have to think about the things you're adding in, because you can't just go from, oh, well, I've been trotting on a circle, so now I'm going to go ahead and do two lines of shoulder in, you know. So it's really important for people to think about what intensity changes they're doing and keep an eye on the time, because you only get to choose from one of two categories, time or intensity. And that's how we build any athlete up, to ensure that the tissue builds not only in a balanced fashion, but that they don't get fatigued in their smaller muscle groups and take over with their larger muscle groups, yeah. Which I think was the whole point of our conditioning study, yeah. Was looking at the core.
Yes. Next week's podcast episode is going to dive into the actual study that we did. I'll put some excerpts from the roundtable discussion we had with Dr. Hewlett of Energy Equine, as well as from the static and dynamic evaluations that both Tina and Dr. Hewlett did for each of the four horses. It may seem like we are harping on this topic a lot, but as mentioned at the beginning of this talk today, without the proper condition of our athletes, they are not going to be able to support themselves and what we are asking of them. They may be able to muscle through for some time, but eventually that lack of adequate support and condition will lead to wear and tear issues on their bodies. So thanks again for joining us on this journey, and we look forward to bringing you more information next week. If you're interested in checking out the conditioning study, it can be found on our online platform at inhandequinetherapy.podia.com, and I'll share that link on the show notes as well. Thank you for listening to the episode. I appreciate each rating and review you can give to help grow this podcast, and ask that you please share it on social media and with your friends. Reach out to the social media pages on Facebook and Instagram under Equine Body Talks to know about upcoming episodes and to connect with me if you have areas you'd like to have discussed or guests you'd like to listen to. All of our episodes can be found on my website at KrebsEquine.com and our Equine Body Talks YouTube channel. Remember to always be an advocate for your horse and not be afraid to open the conversation around your horse's wellness team.